I think we're at a broader inflection point where dissent is becoming harder. We see that in business, we see it in politics, we see it in public discourse. And I see the ability to dissent as essential, both individually and societally. So I feel if you are in a position where you can't speak up, and I was in that position because I had decided to leave the company, I had decided to leave the industry, so there was nobody who was able to badmouth me and hurt my ability to get a new job because I wasn't interested in a new job, and I was also financially stable enough to do all this, then I feel you have a responsibility to do so on behalf of those that are more vulnerable than you.
Welcome to Hello 5050 World, the podcast where we break tech bubbles before they break us and where we talk to people who make tech more humane. Today's conversation on the Hello 5050 World podcast is with Britta Hummel. Britta is a former engineering leader who is now focused on human-centered systems. I got to know Britta a few years ago when she spoke on a panel discussion about her experiences being a woman in a technical leadership position. Today we talk about virtual and mixed reality, how it works, where it creates value, and where not. And we'll learn about Britta's life after big tech, why she left, and what she does today. Let's dive in. Welcome, Britta, to the Hello 5050 World podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you've worked on products like the HoloLens at Microsoft and the Meta Quest, Oculus Quest at Meta. What draw you into virtual or mixed reality?
Okay, I guess I'll start from the very beginning. I studied computer science back in Germany in the late 1990s. Back then, I was more interested in understanding how things work rather than building things. So I stayed at university to complete a PhD in 2009. And then my partner got a job in the US, and I had no plans of moving to the US myself. But eventually I decided to follow him, and I still wasn't particularly interested in a career in Silicon Valley. But what else do you do in the Bay Area other than having a career? So I started working at startups there, and I fell in love with the work. I fell in love with startup life. And it was a great period in my life. I learned a lot, and turned out I wasn't bad at it either. And then the startup that I worked at, Canesta, got bought by Microsoft. That was in 2010. And at the time, Microsoft was already stealthily building something called Project Fortaleza. And that was the world's first augmented reality display. It was a big deal back then. And I was a computer vision researcher at the time. And it was a lucky coincidence that that's what that small team needed. So I joined them. And Fortaleza later shipped as what we now know as Microsoft HoloLens. Soon after, I realized that my heart was still beating for startups, so I went back to the startup world. And right when one of these startups had to fold at the time COVID hit in 2019, I got the call from then Facebook to join their Oculus team to work on their virtual reality device, the Oculus Quest 1. So I made that leap and joined the team. So that's how I ended up working on two virtual or augmented reality headsets, one by Meta and one by Microsoft.
So you were actually there quite early on. How was the vibe at the time when you started building these products in both Microsoft and also Meta afterwards? How is it to build actually technology at such a big scale?
Yeah, early on, the vibe was great because things were more organized like a startup. At Project Fortaleza at Microsoft was a 20-person core team that had a lot of leverage at the organization because the project lead, he had previously shipped the Microsoft Kinect, the world's first body tracker, similar to the Wii, if you remember that time. And so he had a lot of street creds in the company. And yeah, so we could experiment a lot, we could build a lot, and that part was really great. And similarly, when I joined Facebook at the time, Oculus had been bought by Facebook in 2014, but it had still preserved some of that original vibe. And it was really, really cool to work there in the early days where there was a lot of experimentation. We had a lot of leverage there as well. We had reviews all the way up to Mark Zuckerberg to shape the direction of the device. So the early days were the best. I'm almost regretting that I only joined in 2019. The earlier days I'm hearing were even cooler.
these R&D departments or projects in even big corporate companies, they often feel like startups, right? So you kind of get both the startup vibe, but you also get the benefits of a big corporation. Was that also your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So the startup vibes mostly existed at the beginning, and then the more mature the products got, the longer they were in the market, the more corporate it became. And that happened at both companies.
And what was the bet for both Microsoft and also for Meta to invest into virtual reality technologies? Like, what were the use cases that were driving this development?
Back then, Facebook, the use case was really clear: get to a large scale user base. We have the family of apps, there are Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp and Messenger business that literally draws billions of users. So very clearly, that was Mark Zuckerberg's end goal. And Apple and Google both had platforms of their own with leverage. And that was something that he wanted to build for his own company as well.
And what were people expecting to be doing in virtual reality back then? Like, what was sort of the standard use case of virtual reality?
So before it was bought by Facebook, the Oculus team mostly built a gaming device. And that worked pretty well at some point, but it was a niche product. And so Meta's bet was to move that from niche to mainstream.
And do you think that worked out?
No, I mean, what we've seen in the last few years, the metaverse bet is pretty much dead. It got replaced by the bet on AI. And we've seen Meta deprioritize the metaverse. We've seen waves and waves of layoffs. So my prognosis for what's going to happen next isn't very positive. Definitely on the Meta side, given what I've seen internally and what we're seeing in the media now since I left, bet on virtual reality will die out at Meta. And then the question is, who is continuing that technology? Right now we have Meta's biggest competitor is the Pico from ByteDance, the makers of TikTok. So those might be taking over the market. There is also a headset by Valve, which is scheduled, another one is scheduled to be released this year. So those are the biggest contenders.
One of my colleagues was recently at a conference where there was a lot of virtual reality use cases in research. So this is something that even I, as a student, I realized that at universities, there are a lot of student projects about virtual reality. Now you're saying in the industry, it's kind of not clear how it will continue. How do you see this kind of tension between research and the actual applicability of this technology?
Yeah, I really think it's a problem. I think VR should exist. And I'm not saying this from a point of a general gadget lover. Like, back in the days, we were building VR because it's cool and because we can. I am now much more grown up. And I no longer believe we should build tech because we can. But I see a lot of opportunities to use this technology to do good. Research is one thing, but I also see, for example, I'm currently involved in a pilot with two hospitals here in Switzerland where they are treating severely wounded patients, and these people undergo very painful wound treatments, sometimes for several hours, several times a week, and some of them are kids. And so the hospitals are evaluating whether we can use VR to distract patients during these procedures. That's just one example. There's also use cases for VR for mental health. There are great examples where VR is used to treat phobias, for example, through reconditioning or exposure therapy. And we are also right now building an app for trauma treatment. And then what's already in the market is VR is being used for training professionals in emergency response, in healthcare, industrial safety. So I think VR should stay around. The question is, who builds it? Who builds a version that people can stick behind?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll dive a little more into that later on. First, I want to touch briefly on what you've mentioned. You recently left Meta, right? And you also shared that in a blog post, the reasons why you left. You want to share some of these reflections with us.
Oh boy, yeah. In my article, I describe three forces that built up over my time at Meta. So the first was that power and ego really became less checked the higher up the ladder you went. And then second, speaking up or dissent became increasingly risky. And lastly, the kind of leadership that I practice, empathy, multiple perspectives, psychological safety, supporting my team quietly from behind instead of loudly putting myself in the foreground, was becoming less and less efficient in that environment, which rewarded loudness and politics more and more.
What was your breaking point, sort of the moment you realized that you have to leave?
There were a few, actually. I have to admit, for a long time, I didn't fully see it because I actually loved the work. We had a strong team. We had high performance ratings. We had a lot of agency. So that masked the problems a bit. And I also believe things changed around the time COVID hit. But yeah, if I had to pinpoint one or two specific things, there was a meeting where a senior executive repeatedly called a colleague's work fucking stupid multiple times. And what struck me most wasn't even the language. It's that nobody pushed back, despite at least part of his argument being factually wrong. And even the most senior person in the room, I still have this image in my head of them just absorbing it with hanging head, literally hanging head. So it was the power dynamics that made it unsafe to disagree. And once I saw that there, I saw it everywhere. Like when we had to give a demo of our work to Mark Zuckerberg, handlers would adjust the room temperature for him. Or during another demo to him and Boss, our CTO, they brought in their favorite chair. So it was really an echo chamber. There was no way to bring up feedback. It just didn't survive because of the power and ego culture. And I don't even think they did that deliberately. It was something that crept up on them and that was hurting their bottom line efficiency without them really noticing. So that was one. I have another big point that made me realize that this is not the right company for me anymore. I have to be quite careful what I say here because Switzerland does not have whistleblower protection. But what I can say is that my personal impression was that child safety was not a priority in the metaverse. It looked like, to me, like the same playbook that was applied back in the day to grow Facebook and Instagram was now being applied to the metaverse, like a grow-at-all-cost mentality. And in my mind, that didn't pay enough attention to the most vulnerable people on the platform, which were children.
It's really brave of you to share these reflections. I see that also in your face right now, that this is a hard time in your life that you went through. You decided to speak openly about it. What made you decide to do that?
Well, it wasn't something I did lightly. I knew I was exposing myself to legal risks. I had it reviewed by two lawyers. What I ended up publishing was what I felt I could stand behind ethically and legally. So why did I post? I guess on one hand, I don't do well with the silencing. I have to be able to speak my mind to feel well. And also a sense of responsibility, I guess. I think we're at a broader inflection point where dissent is becoming harder. We see that in business, we see it in politics, we see it in public discourse. And I see the ability to dissent as essential, both individually and societally. So I feel if you are in a position where you can't speak up, and I was in that position because I had decided to leave the company, I had decided to leave the industry, so there was nobody who was able to badmouth me and hurt my ability to get a new job because I wasn't interested in a new job. And I was also financially stable enough to do all this. Then I feel you have a responsibility to do so on behalf of those that are more vulnerable than you.
How are you feeling now, a few months after you've published this article? What was also some reactions that you received?
It's been overwhelming, honestly. I'm not a social media person. I don't do podcasts or other social media engagements a lot. So I did not expect much traction. But in the end, Substack counted 40,000 views. Hundreds of people reached out in public comments and privately. And those were the most insightful ones. They said things like, hey, your article deeply resonated, but I'm terrified of reacting publicly to it in any way, so I'm thanking you in private.
Just want to acknowledge how brave it is of you to be speaking up about this also now in the podcast. Thank you so much.
Can I put out a brief shout out to a few folks that inspired me? I only dare do this because others did. So I stand on the shoulders of giants here, people who've spoken up much more loudly and a much, much higher cost. So what I did is really not comparable. So I want to give a shout out to Kelly Stone Lake here, who filed a lawsuit against Meta way before all the things we're seeing now in the media had become public and will likely face serious financial consequences as a result. Or Brian Boland, who lived to testify in front of several Senate committees. He was a VP at Meta beforehand. Or the brave woman who is the plaintiff in the landmark addiction lawsuit against Meta and YouTube at the moment. I'm very, very thankful to all of you because each person encourages the next to speak up.
Thank you for sharing. That's absolutely true. We'll switch gears a little bit, if that's okay for you, and we'll get back to your passion for virtual and mixed reality. You said you don't really want to get back into the industry, but you are still working on virtual reality technology. I would love to hear from you a little bit. What are some of the technical challenges that excite you about virtual reality these days?
So virtual or mixed reality, I think, is at a very interesting inflection point. On the tech side, I believe the biggest problems are actually solved, and Meta is the company that did solve those technical challenges. So a lot of credit goes to them for doing that. So the business side, I believe, is the real problem, but I go into the technical side first. So with the Quest 3 and 3S, we've essentially solved the tracking problem already since a while. We have display tech that is advanced enough. Unless you're a big stickler for display acuity, you'll be fine with the displays we now have. We also have the ability to mix and sprinkle in VR content on top of the real world in a way that makes sense. For example, I could put a virtual monitor right onto this table that we're sitting in front of right now, or on the wall in front of us. And we can produce all this at a price point that works for consumers.
So you've mentioned also the technical challenges are solved, but the business challenges are not solved. What are the bottlenecks that you're seeing right now with virtual reality?
I think we don't have a contender in the market to build a headset that gains enough adoption. I'm not talking Mark Zuckerberg pipe dreams mainstream adoption of the metaverse, but I'm talking about adoption by businesses sufficiently so that we have a sustainable business. More than one person told me recently, if somebody decides to make a crowdfunded open source headset, then I'll donate. So this is my call to action for the troves of recently departed or laid off Meta employees. Make an open source headset. The world needs it. Feel free to laugh. Feel free to ridicule. I don't care. I know it's not easy. You're some of the best people in the world. Parma Lucky was able to make a headset. You can do it, and you can do it without the BS politics that you've had to endure in the last few years.
You also ventured off now and started your own startup again, right? So do you want to share a little bit about what you're doing now?
Yeah, I'm happy to. I'm a bit allergic to the word startup these days because coming from Silicon Valley, this always implicitly implies hyperscaling and taking over the world and becoming a unicorn and gathering as much venture capital as there is. That is not something we want to do. We want, first and foremost, to build tech for good. We're a group of three senior-ish women from ex-Meta who left on their own terms. And we want to see how we can use VR to do our small part to make the world a better place. In essence, we feel we've accumulated quite a bit of negative karma working for a social media giant, even if we were working not on the family of apps, but on the VR side. So now we want to see what can we give back, if anything. And so right now we're building two things under the brand Waven. One is Waven Bilateral and one is Waven Access. Waven Access is what I've already alluded to before. We're currently involved in a pilot program with two hospitals here in Switzerland to treat severely wounded patients that undergo painful wound treatments, sometimes for several hours, several times a week. And we are working with those hospitals to evaluate whether we can use VR to distract those patients. And the other thing we're building is called Waven Bilateral. And Waven Bilateral was born out of the realization that I personally had benefited tremendously from having had access to great trauma therapists to overcome my own childhood trauma. And I was very privileged because I lived at places that were hotspots for where those therapists were trained in these modalities, namely San Francisco and Singapore. And also because I worked in tech and therefore I could afford to pay for those treatments out of pocket. And most people are not in that situation. And yet we have hundreds of millions of people who are in need of some form of trauma treatment. If you're interested in that topic, I can recommend the book, The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. And the consequences of untreated trauma are PTSD, inability to hold down a partner or a job, addiction, self-harm, or worse, harming other people or harming our planet. And I saw that the current model doesn't work. Not only do you have to be incredibly privileged, as I have been, but also the whole model doesn't scale. A therapist has a caseload of around 20 clients, and we have maybe 30,000 officially trained therapists in the modality that I was treated with, so way not enough. So I felt that if we truly want to heal the world, we have to start healing trauma, and to do that, we have to democratize access to trauma treatment. And that's what Wave and Bilateral is about.
Really cool. Can you share a little bit about this treatment that you could get through Wave and kind of putting on the VR headset and then what happens?
Yeah. So as it happens, the modality that led to a breakthrough in trauma treatment worldwide and also solved my own trauma is called EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and that lends itself extremely well to implementation in VR. And that is what Wave and Bilateral is doing. We have an implementation of a part of EMDR in the headset in a working prototype that we're currently testing in a closed alpha version. And the important disclaimer here is I'm not going out and saying, hey, everybody should do self-EMDR because that is not safe to do. You do need a trained therapist to do that. But what I am saying is, if we could stretch out the time from seeing a therapist weekly to maybe once a month or even less, depending very much on a particular situation, if we enable people to help themselves between sessions, then we can start to scale trauma treatment to more people.
So it's basically complementary to seeing a therapist.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And so I've never done this EMDR. So how can I imagine that? So you're following with your eyes kind of something that's moving in front of you, or how does it look like?
Yeah, that's close to what happens. So in EMDR, what happens is that you literally get visual, auditory, or haptic stimulation on both sides of your body in an alternating fashion. So you can, in a simple form, imagine putting on headsets and getting an alternating tone on the left and the right speaker. Or you follow a visual dot with your eyes. In the therapist's office, that's sometimes a therapist's finger, or they use a light bar with a moving light that moves from left to right. Or they put tappers into your hands that vibrate alternatingly. And all these three things are inputs that we can very easily replicate in virtual reality with way less tech overhead, way less bulk, and one single device.
And how does this project now, Waven, compare to your previous jobs, and what excites you about it?
You know, out of my 25 years in tech, for a good 15 years, I've struggled with a lack of meaning. We worked on cool tech, yes, but what was the impact? How did it positively impact people and the planet? And I always envied friends who worked in fields like medical that were actually making a positive difference, but I always thought I lacked the skills to do that. And so now, after quitting Meta, I realize, well, all these companies, this is late-stage capitalism. There is no way that inside that system you can find meaning there, because there really isn't any meaning to the work. There is dollars. That's all there is. And what I found now is purpose, really. Neither of the projects I'm currently working on is making money. In fact, I'm losing money on them at the moment, but I've never had more fun in my working life. And so to everybody who struggles with exhaustion or disappointment or lack of purpose at work and you don't know what to do about this, if you're financially safe enough to do so, I'm telling you, take the plunge, craft your own job, find a job where, you know, Meta folks, you have some of the best skills in the world. Craft a job for yourself where you can use your skills to help others. I promise you, the burnout you feel right now, it will evaporate. You will be filled with a deep sense of purpose that you haven't felt in years or maybe ever. Yeah, doing something meaningful, be it helping others or the planet, is the best feeling ever.
Would you also say that this happened to you, that this exhaustion you felt kind of left you once you found Waven or the idea?
Absolutely. It took a while. But with burnout, they say it often gets worse before it gets better. And that was absolutely true. I wasn't depressed, but I had an immense level of physical exhaustion to the point that even, you know, going grocery shopping or looking after my kids was hard. And that lasted for a few months. And during that time, I did what I could. I worked when I was able to, and I didn't when I wasn't. And so that's over time how I scaled up, back up my ability to work. And now I'm as enthusiastic as ever to do this next chapter.
Awesome. So I have one last question for you before we dive into the rapid fire questions. So looking ahead into the future a little bit, where do you see tech or virtual reality in general going, and what kind of role would you like to play in that future?
So it may be a bit of a weird analogy, but I think tech right now is at a point where the food industry was in the 70s or 80s. Some of you might remember this. At least in our household, in my mother's generation, chemicals and highly processed food were deemed progressive and great for you, and the more the better. We were, babies were being fed with formula, which was considered superior to breast milk. Convenience food was invented. At home, like soups and sauces would be cooked with ready-made packaged stuff that was full of artificial aroma. And of course, massive profits were being made by the food industry, which addicted a whole generation to highly processed sugary food. And so now, all these years later, we are learning about the health disadvantages of all this. And we learned that eating food as it comes out of the earth is in most cases much better for human health, and that the food industry's capitalist self-interest was not serving humanity all that well. And I believe, or I choose to believe, that tech will reach a similar inflection point as the food industry did. A bit of tech is actually really great for medical reasons, for disaster recovery. There's a lot of great use cases, but too much tech, especially for everyday people in their everyday lives, is very, very bad for humanity as a whole and for society, even more so if it's coming unregulated from big tech.
And what do you think we can do as technologists or anyone working in the tech industry right now to help getting over that inflection point?
So what I would love for everybody to pay attention to is to consume and to build tech in moderation and thoughtfulness, not in excess. And also, my call is to regulators. We need to regulate late-stage capitalism in the tech field, because those companies aren't not going to try to addict you. And that's what we're seeing right now with social media and even with mobile phones in general. So to your question of what I'd like to see, personal action by employees, by consumers, and action by regulators. I love what the EU is currently doing in terms of regulating big tech. I love how the world is introducing measures to prevent children from getting addicted to social media. I love each and everybody who dares to speak up against big tech's consolidated power. We need internal employee dissent. And lastly, not least, I love philosophers and artists and writers who can hold up the mirror to our society to show us where we've degenerated from our nature.
We'll now dive into the rapid fire questions to end this wonderful conversation. Are you ready for this?
Let's go.
All right. First question. If you could rewrite any line of code in any product, what would you do?
Change social media feeds from engagement-based to bridge-building-based algorithms. That's what we heard from in your last podcast episode. So shout out to the last person who was at this table before me.
Awesome. Shout out to Vardon and Sparkable here. The second one is, what's an everyday act of allyship that anyone can do.
If someone gets spoken over in a meeting or gets any form of unfair treatment in a group, if you are in the relatively safer position, speak up, say something. For example, you can say, to double down on what X said, or I don't think we've considered Y in our judgment here.
Yeah, absolutely. And the third one is, whose voices do you think we should hear more of in tech?
I think we need more people with a spine. I think we need more people that show up with moral clarity. Look around and look who those people are. My biased view right now, it's the high-performing women who dare to speak out relatively more and who are prepared to live with the consequences. I'd like to hear more outspoken men to stand in for what's right.
Very true. And then the last one, if there's one thing that listeners remember from this episode, what should it be?
We need an open source crowdfunded headset. It needs to exist. It can't be that we have to choose between Meta and its biggest competitor, the Pico from ByteDance, and ByteDance is the maker of TikTok.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Britta, for being here and for sharing all that you've experienced in the tech world, and all the best for the future.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was another powerful conversation with Britta today. What stuck with me on one hand is that virtual reality technology has real-world value. I really loved the examples that Britta shared of the treatment of wound patients that are being distracted with virtual reality, and also what she's building with Waven, used in trauma therapy, real value added here with virtual reality. It's also interesting that technically virtual reality is already there, but the use cases don't necessarily align with maximizing business value. I also loved the idea that she shared of building a crowdfunded VR headset, and I'd love to hear from listeners if you know of any projects that are going in this direction. Last but not least, I think whistleblowers like Britta and others, they deserve a lot of respect for having the courage to speak up about issues in tech and beyond. Thank you all so much for listening in today. As always, we appreciate if you share this conversation with someone who should listen into it, if you drop us a comment of what resonated with you, or if you want to support us. We're now also on Patreon, where you can support us financially to continue with this podcast going forward. And to end today's conversation, a little reflection for you to think about. How can you use your own voice to make tech more humane? Thank you so much, and until next time.